Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Hey, man. What's up?
Hey, welcome back to Lucha Lowdown, all of you believers. We are continuing on in the Cueto Cup tonight and a special feature match, Rey Mysterio taking on PJ Black. And as they mentioned this episode, it's the first Rey Mysterio match since Aztec Warfare. And so when he had his like back all messed up and everything by Matanza. So this is his first official match since then. So that's pretty crazy to think about. But the episode is Booyaka Booyaka. Overall thoughts on this one, Jeff?
I thought it was all right. There were a couple of things I wished were a little different. I'm happy with the way the match has ended up, I suppose. And then I have a few things I want to say about Rey Mysterio Jr. and PJ Black, but I mean, we'll get there at the end, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. I thought it was good. I really enjoyed Pentagon and Drago, which we'll get to in a little bit. I think that was my favorite match of the night, which not surprising because I'm such a huge Pentagon and Drago fan. So seeing them,
it's kind of a dream matchup for you.
It is. And is the first time, which they noted on commentary, the first time that they had gone to war in the temple together. But we start.
They were in a three-way match against each other when they first debuted. I thought.
I guess
with, Phoenix.
In singles because I wrote that down. Singles, I circled it and I was like, really,
their
first
debut
time
match was against each other.
Yeah, because I was like, that doesn't sound right. But yeah, I think the first time in singles. Together.
And also, I mean, I don't want to sound biased, but Phoenix outshone both of them greatly in that debut match.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Pentagon had not reached his full form then at that
no,
point
Pentagon
in time.
Pentagon was a very different performer at that point to me. I look at him completely different now.
He's had
Drago too, for that matter.
Yeah, Pentagon, I think more than anyone, has had a very meteoric sort of arc in Lucha Underground and has changed a great deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he's transformed the most and all for the positive. So, yeah, not looking back.
Yeah, definitely agree. But we started with, again, we're in Group A here as we're moving on in the Cueto Cup. And Mac and Tejano are facing off here. Mac beat Mala Suerte in the very first match of the Cueto Cup to move on. Tejano beat Famous B. Famous B wanted to lay down for Tejano, but Tejano wasn't having that. And they've been teasing, you know, that is Tejano going to join Famous B and just Famous B's whole pursuit of him. What did you think of this first match?
Well, first, I just want to say that I like guys like this matching up against each other because I like the size and the raw power of both performers. We don't see it as much in the temple, so it's nice when these big guys kind of get to slam against each other for a little bit. And then as I'm watching the match, I was thinking what each one really would need in order to be successful in the tournament. The Mac was just the number one contender, and it had two very successful and entertaining matches against Johnny Mundo, very recent history, right before the tournament. So I felt anything short of him winning the tournament, which neither you or I thought was going to happen, I mean, I just don't see how it would really matter. You know, unless he actually won the whole thing, it just seems like all this would be a failure for Mac. Where with Tejano, who I feel has constantly been shortchanged since he joined the temple, you know, every victory I feel is kind of a boon for him. So him getting to take out someone like the Mac, who is just so highly profiled on the show, I was like, this would be a really successful match, especially since Tejano's debut match in Group A was just against Famous B, which, I mean, it was a nothing match. So I really thought just from a narrative perspective, there's no way Tejano could lose this. It would just it makes more sense for the success of his character. And I mean, whether the Mac lost to him or loses in the next bracket, I just feel it's the same.
I think that is a fantastic point because I was thinking about that too. Is that like, yeah, Tejano's in the next round, but he beat Famous B in a match that Famous B wanted to give to him. And you're absolutely right. Is that as Tejano moves deeper, it's more and more of a come up for him. Where it really, I mean, Mac just faced off with Johnny Mundo, so we've already sort of been there, done that. And it's really this whole storyline of Famous B. It's nice that Tejano is getting this sort of shine and sort of being featured in this. And
exactly.
I completely agree with you there too. And I like to your point also that you like seeing the bigger guys in the temple sort of clash and really lock horns. I liked on commentary, they made a big point talking about that too. And I really felt like commentary was on point just in this match. Like, there's a point where Tejano was, like, dazed in the corner, and Mac was doing the knife-edge chops. And Stryker, again, he adds those little things on commentary that I feel like is lost in a lot of other places. He's talking about, like, you know, it might seem like, you know, Tejano could almost, like, you know, see these things coming, but he's so dazed that it just sort of happens. You know, sort of the justification of the business that Stryker does to protect it. And then Vampiro chimes in, too. It's like, or it's almost like a, you know, let's see what you got, letting him wear himself out kind of a deal. So I really appreciated that aspect as far as, again, just protecting the business and the psychology of the match in terms of, yeah, when you do a spot like that where you're looking right at the guy and he's just basically telling you he's going to chop you and you let him do it anyway. So I appreciated that.
It really is a team presentation as far as how you sell the product. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Having the right commentators and having them approach the match the way they do. Yeah, I mean, it changes things drastically. It makes it a lot better. Because, I mean, as kids, you know, there were times where it's like, why is he doing that? I would still accept that it was a real fight, but there were things that were confusing to me.
Yeah, no, totally. And so you're right. It is it's a group effort to sort of put this out there. And
although I still believe Adam Bomb had powers from a radiation blast.
Well, he did.
Why were his eyes that color?
Yeah, you can't explain it other than that. So, and Triple H and Stephanie were legally married in Las Vegas, and yeah, everything
and
else
Pop
since then.
Shango tore up Ultimate Warrior's insides.
Oh God, was it with you that we rewatched that recently? Just like
no,
that
I haven't watched that since that was new.
God, so bad.
I loved that feud as a kid.
Yeah, well, hey,
I was a little warrior.
The Papa Shango character, you know, I mean, the voodoo stuff.
He's much beloved.
Much maligned. But I'm into that voodoo stuff, so it didn't bother me none.
He was Papa Shango at the right time of my life, and he was Godfather at the right time of my life. It was so I could fully appreciate both characters.
Ain't that the truth, man?
Yeah, his characters grew with me.
That is, you know, I just watched that WWE 24 on Kurt Angle. And there's this great moment where I think he's back in his home of Pittsburgh, and he's just like, you'd rather cheer for a pimp than for your Olympic hero. It's just like, man, what a time to be a wrestling fan.
Oh, it was glorious.
It was. But back to Mac and Tejano. So, yeah, they were putting over as far as, you know, their offense and stuff like that. Even, like, I remember at one point Vampiro was talking about, you know, like, the way that Mac even slams himself down into the cover. You know, you have no idea what that feels like just to have such a big dude, like, putting all of his body weight on you. And there was another point that I got to point out on commentary here, too, is when, first of all, Mac did a brilliant job with the Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker outside the ring to Tejano, and he immediately just sold like he blew out his knee to the point where I was like, oh, like, did he actually hurt himself? You know, again, right, that suspension of disbelief that led to a really cool near count out finish. And I liked, and Vampiro even gave Stryker credit for this, is that Stryker adds that little thing. It's like he even gives style to the referees, that some referees allow a little bit more leeway, kind of like umpires in a baseball game have different strike zones and stuff like that. Is that Stryker has sort of developed this way of talking about the refs, how certain ones allow certain more. And he talked about how the referee wasn't going to call a double countout. He let the match continue, and that was absolutely the right call. And Vampiro sort of giving him props. You remember that sequence?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I just...
And it's not the first time Stryker's mentioned that either, and I think it's a good way to go into it. And also, it's realistic that refs would have sort of different styles on how they approach the match, especially with Dario's, you know, kind of...
Yeah.
Unwritten rule as far as how matches should end, especially in the Cueto Cup.
I'd have lots of leeway, you know. And I feel like a lot of refs in Lucha Underground do.
Underground street fighting, isn't it? You know, it's in a temple. I mean, this is all loosely legal at best.
Yeah.
Dario was behind bars before this season.
It's true. Very briefly.
men have been killed in the temple.
Allegedly.
I saw one get torn to shreds.
Allegedly. There's never any proof that could tie it back to Dario. But I did like that. Again, they were just like, they're doing such a good job on commentary in this match. And then Famous B showed up in full, like, cowboy regalia again. The hold on there, partner. Pulled out a friggin' water gun. What did you think about Famous B's involvement? And there was one thing that caught my eye about it, which I wonder if it stuck out to you too. But what did you think about Famous B getting involved here, which led to Tejano getting the win?
I want Tejano to just win the match because I think he's capable of defeating the Mac. But at the same time, I understand where the story's going, and I like that Famous B participates in it. Also, I'm a big fan of Famous B's brand of heel.
Yes.
And I think it really has a place in Lucha Underground. So I'm always happy whenever he participates because I feel he gets a very unique rise out of the fans that you don't get to see a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And so he did a distraction. It was innocuous enough where it gave Tejano the opening to hit the finisher with the powerbomb. So I think it did a decent enough job. I agree with you. It's like Tejano should be able to beat, you know, the Mac without needing help and vice versa.
Yeah, no, I think the two of them are very evenly matched. I was looking forward to this match for that exact reason. And every time I'm blown away by the Mac's athleticism.
Yeah.
It just, his strength and agility, you just don't see that enough.
My favorite moment from this match, though, is so Mac gives Famous B the stunner. And in selling the stunner, because Famous B's wearing these cowboy boots, he, like Wizard of Oz, like with the ruby slippers like hanging out from underneath the stone, they get caught up in the ropes. So the rest of him's lying on the mat outside the ring. But you just see his boots hanging onto the ring apron underneath the bottom rope. And I am just like, that is hysterical. I was dying. It took him forever to finally just slide down all the way. So, yeah, it just looked like he was like one of the Wicked Witches that had been crushed. And there's just the feet hanging right there. I just thought that was wonderful. But Tejano is moving on, as you and I both had in our bracket. So we're still good in Group A.
Dude, Group A, we're killing it.
Yeah.
I love Group A.
Yeah, Group A is our bread and butter.
Good old predictable Group A.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And this was fun. And it was good to see these two big bulls duke it out. And that led to the first vignette of the evening. And one of the things I appreciated about this is I didn't know why, but there was a distinctly like more country vibe type music they were playing. As it led into this vignette, and it made sense because it was in a bar with Son of Havoc and Son of Madness interacting. So I appreciate that they even like changed up the tone of the music that they usually do to like sort of fit these two characters. What did you think of Havoc and Madness interaction in this bar?
I like the interaction. I'm glad that the story is going on, but I couldn't help but think while I was watching it, Son of Madness, you couldn't bring a little more of this toughness back during your debut match against Havoc?
Yeah, which really screwed our bracket.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about Group D.
Well, they're pretty evenly matched. So we got a few things out of this, though, is that they're I guess the biker club is called the Invisible Cult or something like that is what I heard them say, which sounds awesome.
I don't know about that. I'm not a huge fan of that name.
No? I don't know.
No.
It sounds interesting. And we got Son of Havoc talking about how, you know, there was obviously some catalyst incident that led him to go, and I quote, nomad, which is awesome, too, because it makes me think of Captain America. So I appreciated their back and forth here. I totaled dick move by Madness and cutting off, you know, Havoc getting a much-needed drink. And, I mean, we'll... we're going to see where this goes, but I'm interested to learn as far as what the sort of catalyst incident was with this thing and just how deep and what was Havoc into and everything like that. So
you need to know more about the biker lore is what you're
exactly.
You're
so I need Vampiro clearly.
Well, maybe this ties in Ivelisse and we got ourselves another Cowboy Bebop love triangle.
That's what I want,
he's
man.
Spike. And Madness is vicious.
That's what I want, man. I want it to be that they ran off together. You know, there was something. Maybe she was dating the biker leader or something like that. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe he, like, tried to lay hands on her or something and Havoc, you know, not that Ivelisse needs saving. I don't know. Something with that, though,
but
I'm
Havoc
totally down for.
That she does, and then that's the charm.
Book it. I love it. Exactly. There it is.
Want a rom-com with them.
Yeah.
Throwing in Helico.
We ship it. That's what we ship, and I miss Ivelisse on Lucha
They're
Underground.
Endgame.
So hopefully she gets to come back soon. I know she's dealing with that injury.
So many damn strings. It's hard to keep it all straight, but I love the lore. I love the story.
It's getting really good with that. So we'll see where Havoc and Madness go. We went from there right to another vignette, and sweet Masquerita Sagrada in full cape and sort of like got his like little pimp strut going on. He's got a huge
I know his little walker.
He was swag. He was feeling himself, man. He had his swag going on. He had this big present for the rabbit tribe, and I liked how
it's actually a normal size present just in his hand.
Fair enough. I liked how Paul London and Saltador or Malasuerte were playing checkers on Saltador's checkered body. I thought that was incredible.
Are they not the most delightful tribe?
They are so not serious, but it works. It just
they're the Deadpool of Lucha Underground.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, that is a great call, especially Paul London and just his whole everything.
Paul has to do all the talking.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
What's also kind of funny about these vignettes. It's Paul talking to three other people.
Yeah, that is wow. That is very true. So
I was thinking about that. I was like, boy, it's more difficult than you would think. You know?
Yeah, he's just got to sort of play off all of them without them saying anything.
He has to play off all of them, and then they have to really convey a lot through their body language. It comes off well. They're all doing a great job, but yeah, that's not easy.
Yeah, Masquerita in particular, he's great in just sort of how dismissive he is of them. So he left them a gift, and I really love Paula. And don't be rude. Read the card. And just said, hopefully this will bring you
right.
Better luck. So he apologized to Masquerita for failing him in the Cueto Cup that
they
all
got
eliminated.
Yeah, they all failed him in the tournament.
Yeah, so they're still deifying him. So they're opening the gift. I don't know if you appreciated this, but like Paul London sort of pantomiming as they're like throwing all the packaging everywhere. Just like, it's like, I don't know. He was having like way too much fun as they were like tossing it all over the place. And they finally, in this big box, they get down to what the gift is. And it's a rabbit's foot. And I was so happy they did this. I was like, well, they're not going to like that at all. And then they just immediately start screaming. They're mortified by the rabbit's foot. What did you think about the vignette?
I liked it for what it was. I think it's it's nice to have little breaks like that every once in a while. And at the same time, this is its own storyline too. And that was advancing the plot. But it's just more jovial and relaxing. I think that's good.
I feel like they think that Masquerita's forsaken them now.
It'll be curious to see how that goes. Listen, their obsessive attraction to him does not end well.
No.
It just,
and probably not for Masquerita.
No, well, it's three big guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Masquerita's handled some tough competition before, but can't handle all of them.
Get weird. Well, that's the whole thing. Is like the rabbit tribe could be into some really weird stuff, too, that we haven't seen yet.
Well, we've talked about that also as far as exactly what would they even want to do with their deity. You know, are they just going to worship him from afar? Do they want to do some sort of weird sacrifice or ritual? I mean, it could be dangerous for Masquerita Sagrada even if he did accept them.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. So we'll see what happens there. We then get to my favorite match of the night, which is Drago versus Pentagon one-on-one for the first time ever. What did you think of this match?
I thought this was a cool match. But then what I liked most about it was the very end, or I guess even after the match. So I don't know. You'll probably want to go more into two of your top guys as far as how they performed against each other.
Well, I do think that they had like a really instant, very good chemistry in the ring. I liked Vampiro.
Yeah,
pointing,
I think so too.
I liked Vampiro pointing out that, you know, Pentagon has added some stuff into his repertoire in terms of like the Taekwondo kicks he was using. And just again,
which kind of goes back to more vintage Pentagon, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Also, when he was doing more of a martial arts,
he's a
theme
skeleton ninja.
Well, yeah, because the way I looked at it was even before he hooked up with Vampiro, he was well traveled as far as the backstory of his character.
Those awesome vignettes where he was like kicking all those guys' asses in Asia.
And he's kind of like a Wolverine type character also with the edge about him and everything. And we know that he's now had trouble with the Chinese triads.
Yes, exactly. But so I appreciate that. I liked Matt Stryker sort of calling Vampiro on that, that Vampiro was in sort of being more effusive of Pentagon than he has been in recent memory. So I don't know. I really enjoyed this. I liked, again, Cobra Moon's involvement as sort of the master of the reptile tribe and stuff like that. She has grown into that role really well, I think.
Yeah, I think she's finally found her place, honestly, because her debut, you know, I thought it left much to be desired. There wasn't really anything there. Once they actually gave her some story and, you know, like consistent characters to interact with, that's when she's really just kind of come into her own. And I also, like you, I've come around. I like the idea of her as the snake charmer. I think it would have been cool with her as a lieutenant more But I mean, it's worked out fine, so I don't really have any complaints.
Yeah, if there was like a big bad behind all this too.
But it would also have to be somebody who interacts. We can't go with like the strong silent type because we already have that with Mil Mortes.
Yeah, very so, true.
Yeah. So yeah, I think what they ended up doing, I think, was right.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And like you said, she has had now has these people have a consistent group to work with and everything like that. So she doesn't have to be so over the top, like with her debut match where she was really almost like trying to sell that she was a snake and stuff like that, instead of just sort of letting it happen kind of deal. That being said, I do like her finish, 'cause it is like a snake sort of like taking down its prey, but.
And listen, I appreciate anybody that does stuff like that too. I'm like James Remar in The Quest. Oh, she's a snake.
Yeah, no. And I do too, but it was like at a certain point, it's like, it felt almost at times. It was like, we're, you know, forcing it a little bit, but I do dig that. But yeah, she's done great this season. I want to go back to that throne room at some point soon. I want to figure out what's going on in Drago's head.
For a few people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
She's one of the ones who's coming to her own.
But again, for the time this was given, I thought this was a really fun match. A great moment when like Drago's going for the backhand spring and Pentagon just kicks the crap out of him. And
Pentagon's got that viciousness, man.
He does. He does. Like, he got to that like very sort of raw attacks too. Like, even when he just like kicks the hamstring of people and sends them to the ground. Like, it's just those things that just like you don't usually see, but they look like they hurt, and it doesn't, you know, necessarily look the prettiest. Man. Yeah. So
his controls work a lot like a Jax almost in Mortal Kombat, even though he looks more like a ninja.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, that's pretty true. But yeah, so Pentagon did put him away with the package pile driver, and it was looking like Drago was next in line to have his arm broken. Cobra Moon tried to make the save. And
that was one of my favorite parts because I thought that was perfect.
Same. Dude, she got the crap kicked out of her face. Like,
They are killing it with these kicks, man.
That is true. Lucha Underground has the best strikes in pro wrestling. That was insane.
Cobra Moon has just been getting destroyed.
Even by Masquerita. Yeah.
I was just, because when she, I was having shades of Masquerita when I watched her get kicked by Pentagon. And I was like, of course there's no way she's going to just let Drago get his arm broken. She's going to try to help.
Yeah, exactly.
And Pentagon sees a woman's face. Obviously, he's going to kick it.
He's an equal opportunity ass kicker. So he has no qualms.
I think he's kicked more women's faces this season than men's.
That's true. Well, he has run afoul
he's
of women.
He's more women, though, I think, than men.
He's, Tony Perkins in Psycho. You know, he's got some issues that he's trying to work out. What can I say? But yeah, he definitely has run afoul of more women than I think anybody else in the temple. But so Cobra Moon ate a super kick for her trouble. Then Aerostar showed up, and I love this sequence at the end with Aerostar making the save for Drago, trying to
force the handshake, bro.
Yeah, I know, dude. That was, I mean, he was like, dude, like, shake my hand. What did you think about how this all went down?
I thought for a guy who sees the future, he was caught by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's put his blinders on for his friend.
Well, and also I wonder if you see the past clearly and obviously the present, but then as far as the future goes, it's branching.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of different dendrites and you don't know which way it's going to go. I feel bad for Aerostar, but I'm loving this storyline and I'm glad that they're still sticking with it and pushing it forward. You can't give up on your friend, you know? And at the same time, Pentagon doesn't leave the ring unless he breaks somebody's arm.
Dude, and Pentagon was pissed, and I liked how they were selling that Pentagon was pissed.
Dude, the audience was pissed. Yeah. They were booing Aerostar.
Well, Drago's a heel, and Pentagon was going to give him what for. It's like, what are you doing, Aerostar? And then Drago...
No, and then they cheered when Aerostar's arm got broken.
Well, that's
man's
what
a hero.
And even Stryker on commentary is like, you found out what happens when you stick your nose where it doesn't belong. And so, yeah, Drago turned on Aerostar again. And leaves him prone for Pentagon. So Pentagon broke Aerostar's arm, which maybe other than Mil, the most high profile arm he's broken.
Yeah, El Dragon Azteca Jr. as well, I suppose.
Yeah, that too. But I mean, I think Aerostar, at least, you know, somebody who was around more in season one
Aerostar has more longevity and he's had more scenes, more dialogue. Yeah. I think
so. I'm glad they're advancing this storyline, but now Aerostar has a broken arm, so I hope this time traveler is able to heal fast.
Some of those arms heal pretty quickly, though, and we've still got the tournament to go.
Yeah, that's
true. Aerostar's already been eliminated. Drago's been eliminated. So, I mean, we really shouldn't see Aerostar in action.
Yeah, that's very true.
For a little bit.
But, yeah.
We might see him in some vignettes.
You're right. The crowd was in a frenzy. They're bloodthirsty.
Pentagon does something to that audience. That episode where he just went against the Lotus tribe or Lotus triad, it was just, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting.
They demand broken bones.
I think it just goes back to season one. I mean, what a cool story. This guy's like breaking bone. Like, it's sick, but it's also like, it just fits so well with the theme that this guy has like some sort of like ancient master that he's like, you know, we're in the temple and he's sacrificing people. So it works. And now people have come to expect
it. More of a habit because it's not like he sacrifices Vampiro anymore.
You can't stop. You know, he's got a taste for it.
Yes.
This led me to my Why I Love Lucha moment of the week, and that was the vignette between Pentagon and Katrina.
Great. Your favorites.
This was a great episode for me.
James Kincaid episode.
Yeah, this was a great episode for me, and I loved, just their interaction. The appreciation that Lucha Underground has for a callback to things that happened in its past, and I loved how Katrina, you know, displaying her powers to the audience as far as grabbing Pentagon by the head and then, forcing that flashback as far as the unfinished business between Miel and Pentagon. And I love her teleportation and everything. And she, of course, again, Inferno of Hotness, just looking so good. And Pentagon, no selling it and just doing the silent Cerro Miedo. Everything I loved about this segment. What did you think of it?
I am a fan of her teleportation. I like whenever they have her use powers in the vignettes because I think it's cool. I thought that was an interesting way to show a flashback for the audience was to have her like kind of implant that in his mind while she's talking to him. I thought that was creative. And then, yeah, that's exactly what I would expect from Pentagon Dark.
Just no
zero fear, zero fucks.
Yep, exactly. It just worked. It was just like, it was so true to both of their characters. It was great. Yeah.
It was an accurately written scene. Yeah, that's exactly how those two would interact.
It was
I'm looking forward to it. And then it sounds to me like her bracket looks like our bracket.
Yeah.
I got Pentagon Dark and Miel Mortis going up against each other.
Yeah, and she mentioned how she's hoping for that and how Miel won't just end his run in the Cueto Cup but end Pentagon altogether. And
that's
I
should have shown Jeremiah Crane in the corner. Thanks for not picking me.
Just beating off. Yeah.
Using his tears.
Oh, man.
Sad Crane. Hey. If you look to your left, you'll see a sad, sad man.
Crane represents all of us. We're all sad that she's with Miel and not us.
We've all been Jeremiah Crane at some point.
Yeah, exactly. So he's the common
we've
man.
We've all been Miel Mortis at some point, too. She doesn't love him either.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Maybe it's Penta that she loves. If it's not me, which of course it is. But
maybe you're Penta. Never seen the two of you together.
True.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I have.
I would never threaten to break her arm. Would never. But yeah, so that was my Why I Love Lucha moment of the week. And that takes us to the main event, which is PJ Black versus Rey Mysterio. I thought this was a lot of great athleticism on display here. It did become sort of a reminiscent Worldwide Underground type of match. What did you think of it?
Yeah, a couple things about this match, because I was looking forward to it because I'm a fan of both guys. And PJ just had a great match.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked a vignette before this at some point in the episode, either PJ and Mundo or PJ and the whole team. And kind of just to reiterate the point of PJ's mission really would be just to break Rey tonight.
Yeah.
You know, that's really all he needs to do. And even have it where maybe that's not what PJ wants. PJ wants the win. Even though it wouldn't get him anything other than to say that he beat Rey Mysterio Jr., which is, you know, no small feather in your cap.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's a phenomenal point. And maybe have Mr. Cook, maybe have him make his, you know, second appearance too, that since he's the one that advocated for this match too. I agree. I think that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and then just Mundo basically saying it's like, whether you win or lose, whatever, just make sure that Rey is broken because my desire, which then trickles down to the Underground's desire is that I beat him easily when it's time for the two of us to face each other. And then it kind of comes with those conflicting personalities of, is everybody just doing what Johnny Mundo wants, or do they have their own ulterior motives as well? I don't know. I'm just, that's how I was looking at it with the Worldwide Underground. I would have enjoyed that. And then as far as this match goes, you're right. Definitely great athleticism, because both of these guys are just phenomenal talents. But it wasn't exactly how I wanted it to go. It started that way because there was a lot of those fast-paced moves and just the two of them kind of checking each other a lot. But then it seemed to be more of like those bigger, like just like stunt maneuvers, you know, and there's a lot of like breaks and pacing in between that I wasn't a huge fan of. I prefer the more fast-paced matches, honestly. But then at the same time, like we were just talking about at the beginning of the episode, it was Ray's first match since he had kind of been broken a little bit. He's also not the Ray of, you know, yesteryear. So, you know, it's not like he can definitely do those matches consistently anymore.
I agree with you. And it was not as good as PJ and Puma from the week before. But it was still good, like you said, but it did have some pacing issues in it. And then we got the sort of predictable, the ref bump, and then Worldwide Underground's involvement, which I'm fine with because, you know, they want to soften Ray up.
And I'm fine with it, too, because that's exactly what this match was supposed to be anyway. It clearly was just set up to hurt Ray.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason for it. And PJ Black is the perfect agent for that. I see him as kind of like the assassin of the group because he's tough and he's very capable. And then I wouldn't say that he's the most trusted member. Obviously, Ty would be the most trusted member. But I think he's somebody that you could always set up against somebody and expect him to do well.
Yeah, absolutely.
He made it furthest in the tournament. Or no, he and Ty both made it equally far. They both made it to the second round. But I thought the whole thing went really well as far as that. And then I'm glad that El Dragon Azteca Jr. came out to help Ray. And we can just kind of go away from him being angsty and possibly even upset of Ray, you know, ruining his chances in the tournament. We've already got enough of that with Puma as the scornful ex-apprentice. Maybe we'll just have El Dragon Azteca Jr. be the good one, you know?
Yeah, I was happy to see his involvement, you know? It's like, okay, he's
good. And then it's kind of cool because now he's got a grudge against all of them too.
Yeah,
you know?
Which could set him up in the future for a really high-profile rivalry with any one of them.
A lot of them, yeah. It's and those are all going to be great matches because there's not a weak link in the bunch.
Yeah.
What I thought was funny was you've got the three core guys in the ring and El Dragon Azteca Jr. is fighting them. It's like, dude, you can't forget Taya. And then that's exactly what he did.
He
paid the price for it.
What I was thinking about was Worldwide Underground kind of involves sort of Rabbit Tribe-esque in their involvement in terms of how they were showing up sort of, you know, sporadically, you know, one at a time.
Yeah,
exactly. So I thought that was interesting. Jack Evans still rocking like he has a toothache style with the bandana around his mouth because he hurt his jaw.
I had a toothache from like the 1800s.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's hilarious. I really like them trying to hurt Ray. I liked Mundo sliding in, counting the 1-2, and then not counting the 3 for Ray. That was a great, like, you know, just heel move. What did you think about Ray prevailing here and sort of defeating the Worldwide Underground as opposed to sort of like getting the beat down and perhaps teasing like a possible injury for Ray moving forward?
I thought that was a miss, but at the same time, I consider myself a very traditional promoter. So I definitely would have had the heels winning all the way up until the penultimate match of Mundo versus Mysterio, and then I would have Ray win. I mean, I had the same shocked look on my face that PJ had.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great camera shot.
Yeah, because you catch all of the Worldwide Underground, especially Taya's reaction, I thought was awesome as well.
And then you just have his wide open eyes above Ray's chest. But I just felt like it was set up so perfectly for the Worldwide Underground to get one of their sneaky wins.
Yeah,
and it would have just been more fuel on the fire,
and it would have been great for PJ too. And it would have furthered a lot of things.
That's something really impressive to have on your resume is that you were one of the guys that took out Rey Mysterio Jr.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I'm never going to be upset if Rey Mysterio Jr. wins a match.
Totally.
He's one of my top guys since I was a kid. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in lockstep with you there. And then Rey cut a promo on Mundo afterward that I thought was very good. But I do think I would have teased
this piece of shit right here.
Exactly.
Oh, dude, and I love PJ Black just flipping off the whole crowd. Worldwide Underground also just tapping into that type of heel that I just really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. So
they're own generation's Degeneration X.
Yeah, I mean, similar. I mean, PJ does the crotch chopping and stuff like that too. So
yeah,
you know, they definitely have that going on for them.
It's young, cocky, you know, showboating.
Yeah, and Mundo's a huge Shawn Michaels guy.
Yeah, totally. Well, I was thinking when he was doing the three count, it's like, best looking ref I've seen since Shawn Michaels put on the stripes. and that was another thing too, which is so in league with PJ's character, is a couple of times when he did have it over Ray, even when it was still just the two of them fighting, the guy can't stick to a match to save his life. He still has to mug for the crowd. He still has to show what a hot shit he is. And I love that about him, because that's such a great heel maneuver. That's exactly how certain heels lose, and I think it's very fitting for the Darewolf.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So that is how Lucha Underground ended for this week. Moving on in the Cueto Cup now. By the way, we both had Pentagon moving on over Drago as well. So Group A stayed perfect for us, and thankfully so. So our brackets are, you know, busted on one side pretty well, but this side staying pretty strong.
At least we have Group A. Bizarro Bay, which is also known as Group D.
And then we're going to part ways because I foolishly now feel that I picked Jeremiah Crane to get a victory over Mil Muertes, and that's definitely not going to happen. Yeah, that's looking not smart for me to pick Crane over Muertes.
You disagree with me, you disagree with Katrina.
Oh, egg on my face. Never mind. But yeah, so we'll see what happens. That is going to do it for us tonight here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.